keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in and welcome back. We had a great show on Monday. Our longtime caller, Manny Aguilar, was with us in the studio, and we had some fireworks going on. And thankfully, we got through all of our previous technical difficulties that we were having last week after a software update that we had that has to do with our radio station. So tonight should be smooth sailing, but we do have a crazy show in store for you. We got some awesome guests calling in, and of course we have our native host that we have joining me. One in studio, one remotely. First of all, if anybody wants to join the conversation tonight, we're going to be talking about all kinds of topics. And if we don't hit a topic you want to talk about, or if you want to just, you know, have your voice heard about a topic that we are talking about, feel free to call us 718-717-8296. Make sure you keep your, if we add you to the call, make sure you mute the radio station and your microphone until we come to you, and you'll know we're coming to you because we'll mention your area code. So just keep that in mind, because if you don't mute up, we have to hang up on you because it causes some issues with our situation with the calling and all that stuff. But with that out of the way, I want to welcome my guest in studio, Jake Anderson. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Kind of in mourning right now.
I know you're sad, man, and we're gonna get into that right now. Yeah. And you know, I know a lot of people probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sad too, maybe for a different reason that you have.
Well, you just spilled your beer. I think that.
Well, I'm not too sad about that. Now we're also joined remotely with our longtime co-host DB Schwartz. How you doing tonight, man?
Doing well, Nick, and I'm pretty sure what you're sad about is what people protested up here.
Exactly, man. And so, actually, I think we're going to go into that first, because we have a special guest joining us from Ohio tonight that has a lot of information regarding the Samuel DeBose killing by the cops out there in Cincinnati. We have one of our awesome journalists on the line with us right now, Claire Bernish. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I could be a lot better after seeing this.
Hey, Claire.
Hi.
So I'm sure, well, mostly probably everyone listening heard about, at least heard about what happened with Samuel DeBose last week. He was gunned down by a cop at, I think it was UC Cincinnati, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was kind of sketchy. The report that we had, which was relatively exclusive, that Claire actually did an interview with one of his family members, and they were really frustrated because the cops didn't want to release the video footage. And you know, then we start hearing chatter that, oh, the video is really bad. And then we started hearing that you know, some of the people in the police department were saying, well, we don't want to release this video because then it's going to be really, really bad. But regardless of all that stuff, the video was released today and we got to see what was going on. And Claire, you wrote an article about it. Can you tell us a little more about what's going on out there?
So it was the University of Cincinnati campus cop that had pulled over Sam DeBose for missing a front license plate, which is illegal in Ohio. Obviously not that big of an offense. And the police here, when news of this first came out, the officer Tenzing, who had shot Mr. DeBose, he had scraped his knees and got bruised up. And the first story that came out was that when he fired his weapon, he fell backwards and skinned his knees. And then almost immediately, they changed their story and said that DeBose had was driving away from the scene, and the officer got caught in the car and was dragged along with it. And, you know, when they start changing their story like that, nobody really, you know something's up. And they did not release the footage like they said that they were going to for the family within, you know, 24, 48 hours after it happened. And
that itself, it goes against protocol, right? Don't they have a protocol where they have to release a video within 48 hours?
Yeah, they were. But the family was supposed to receive news within a certain amount of time, and they just didn't say anything to the family. They didn't say, no, we're not going to do it or anything. They just, you know, just skipped that part entirely. And there have been calls to release this body cam footage for a long time, and the local paper, the Cincinnati Inquirer, and I believe a couple other outlets and some activists had sued to try to get the footage released. But the police were holding it back because they said, you know, well, obviously, I mean, they've seen it. They knew it was bad. So they were waiting to release it because they wanted, I guess they wanted the city to be prepared or something. And today they released the footage finally in conjunction with actually charging Officer Tenzing for murder. So...
Yeah, I was really surprised. I woke up this morning and I saw that he was being indicted for murder. I was like, what? This quick?
I mean, there's a long-standing history of this in Ohio. I mean, there's people who were saying, I mean, there'd be riots worse in Ferguson and Cincinnati than I hadn't.
Yeah. We do not have a very good history of good, like, citizen police relations in this city at all. And it's healed a little bit over time, but, you know, that this particular murder actually brought that to mind for a lot of people. So,
hey, Claire, I have a question for you. And we were chatting about this a little bit earlier online. I watched a couple of the videos, one of them straight through. So the point at which, and you haven't actually described the video yet. I guess I should have given you a chance to do that. But at one point, the officer reaches in, or the DeBose, you know, he kind of tries to close the door a little bit as though he's about to take, about to leave. I don't think you can conclusively, deduce that from the video, frankly. But the officer shoots him in the head. He murders him. And then that's when I don't understand what happens. He starts to run and scream. Was he posturing to sit to
make it seem like
to make it seem like some, that the guy had done something to then later make it seem like it would be ambiguous?
I think what actually happened, I've heard people who have actually analyzed this, you know, in theory, and have gone like frame by frame, and they say that it's possible that after Tenzing shot DeBose, he got caught up in the car a little bit and was actually pulled along with it. So it's either possible that he was acting like you say, which is kind of my thought, or he actually did get pulled along. But the original story that he got pulled along with the car and then shot the man is like backwards.
He doesn't look like the car's moving.
It looked like the guy was reaching for his seatbelt.
Yeah, that's what it looked like to me.
And then the guy kind of reaches in and there's a struggle, then he just immediately shoots him. And then once he gets shot, then his foot slams on the gas because he's dead.
There's actually struggle. There was no struggle whatsoever.
No, there was no physical altercation. That cop reached in, and within 1 to 2 seconds of reaching into that guy's car, he shot him in the head.
Yeah.
Right, at close range, too. And I'm actually reading an article that talks about what is actually written in the police report and what the Tenzing told his supervising officer at the scene. And he says... Officer Tenzing stated that he almost was run over by the driver of the Honda Accord and was forced to shoot the driver with his duty weapon. That's what he put in his report.
Well, he can say that in court all he wants, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the prosecutor here, a lot of people, we've had problems with him. Some people, he's not really, you know, that great of a prosecutor. Some people don't really like him. So, at any rate, the prosecutor called this senseless and asinine, and, you know, that's really saying something.
Yeah, that prosecutor really, really came out of the gate swinging.
And that's a person that typically is not very good on these
issues.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they realize the repercussions of letting, I think they realize what will happen to the city if this guy is not punished.
Exactly, and I kind of want to bring that up, because, for one, it wasn't that long ago when Ohio had to deal with the Tamir Rice shooting, which, anyone not familiar with that, is the young boy, I think he was like 12 years old or so, that was gunned down in Ohio because he had a pellet gun or a toy gun. So there's that. And then also, you know, the Sandra Bland thing, which has been boiling over for the last several weeks. And she's the one who died in police custody. So
John Crawford, too, in the Walmart, who had picked up the air gun or something in the store and was walking around the store with it, and he got shot and killed in the store.
Yeah, the guy was shopping for a pellet gun, and he gets gunned down by the cops. I mean, insane. So, I mean, the point I want to bring up here, and I want to get everybody's opinion on this. Manny's also joining us on the line as well. Manny, we'll come to you with your opinion on this as well. But, you know, we posted an article several months ago following the Ferguson riots, written by Justin King, and he kind of had an analysis, and the article is called Why Riots Actually Work. But I kind of want to tie this into what's going on right now in Cincinnati, because I think that there's a point to that, because what we're seeing there is that they know that if they don't do anything about this, if they just let this cop off, that there probably would be riots. So therefore, their hand is forced. There has to be justice now, because they know if they let him off, well, something really bad is going to happen.
So I
got to jump in here for something, though, because actually there's only been three police officers here who have been indicted for like unjustified killings, and the other two, like Tenzing is one of them. The other two have gotten off without any charges; like they ended up being cleared. So, you know, just because he's been indicted for murder doesn't necessarily bode well.
Yeah, this is pretty compelling visual evidence, and the fact that the prosecutor has already come out and with such strong words. I mean, he basically said this was cold. I mean, did he not say this was cold-blooded murder or something?
More or less.
He did.
So Jake, I want to go to you first. Do you think that the riots in Ferguson and Baltimore had anything to do with this cop being indicted as quickly as he did?
Absolutely, I do. And then there's an, I think, I actually didn't read Justin King's full article about the riots, but, you know, I think civil disobedience works to a point, and then I think people have to show, you know, what they're willing to do, what the populace is willing to do when they're pushed to a certain extent. Yeah, this is absolutely a response to Ferguson and wanting to placate the people who are rightfully angry and tired and fed up with this kind of crap.
Yeah, man. Claire, what do you think?
I do think that it is, but I think that if we didn't have our own history here in Cincinnati of this kind of, you know, the rioting and the bad relationship with the police and stuff, I don't know that he would have necessarily had an indictment for murder. Maybe manslaughter, I don't know. But I think that Ferguson and, you know, New York and everything else, I think they have a lot to do with it. And I read Justin's article, and I mean, I agree with that. There is an extent to which, you know, unrest and protest and rioting, I can see where that, it has validity, but it's not necessarily going to work every time.
That video evidence is very shaky. Like, they could, I honestly think they could easily try to argue that something happened there that we can't see. I just think people are at their wits' end with this shit.
Now, unfortunately, one thing I noticed in that video is that there was another guy that just walked right by. And if that guy would have stopped and turned around and videotaped instead, then we'd have two separate angles of what's going on. So before we go to DB on his thoughts, I just want to throw it out there. If you see people getting pulled over, you never know when the next shooting or the next police misconduct is going to happen. If you see it and you have the time to do it, I recommend everybody try to videotape these incidents as much as you can, you know, because then we could have more and more evidence to know exactly what went on. Right now, we're solely reliant on the cops' testimony and his body cam, And the other thing about the body cams is that these cops are getting pretty good at, you know, making, you know, they know where the camera's pointing, they know the angles, so they can make it seem like they're innocent, even if they're not, just by the angle of the camera or by covering the camera, turning off the camera. We can't rely on these body cameras solely. DB, what are your thoughts on the riot versus, you know, the charges on this guy?
Well, I mean, I watched the video myself, and you kind of have to do it just because he gave the guy no time to comply at all. It was just cold-blooded instinct on his part, and he wasn't really reaching for anything. So it was just simply that he gave a little resistance, just a little bit. That was justification for this guy.
To shoot him, you know? Just shoot someone like that.
And I know. Nick, we've said it a million times, Nick, that until we find a way to hold these officers individually accountable when they go outside of the scope of being a normal human being, nothing's going to change.
Great point, man. Great point. Hold I want to go next to Manny. Manny's joining us now. Welcome to the show, man. I know you probably have a little bit of a dissenting view on the riots and the scenario going on in Cincinnati right now. What do you think?
Well, yeah, as an activist, number one, I don't think that cops should have been out there anyway, because I've always been fighting about cops becoming immigration officers. Now you got college campus police being part of the, you know, he was out of his jurisdiction, you know, stuff like that. He should have never been, you know, outside anyway, stuff like that, you know. And to completely shoot without probable cause and stuff like that, it just, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that a lot of these agencies are now keeping their minds on what's happening in Ferguson and stuff like that. I know that there's a big company that's surely keeping their eyes that there's not going to be a riot over there, because CVS got two stores burned down in Ferguson, so they don't want to, you know, see that happen again and stuff like that. So it's just cold-blooded killing, no other way to say it, that one in particular, stuff like that. While I'm on the phone, I mean, while I'm talking right now, too, I also want to thank Nick for that, you know, belated birthday, you know, good, you know, beer out there and stuff like that. I really enjoyed the show with you and Jake. Thanks for,
Jaime
and his partner for a beautiful dinner. It was really good, great host and stuff like that. You know, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome, man. That was great having you here. I missed you in the morning. You must have taken off early before I woke up. Now, another thing to keep in mind, we got a couple callers on the line here. We're going to go to them as well. But first, I want to make a point. We got to keep an eye out for false stories that are coming out, because I saw a story today from Sputnik, which is a Russian news propaganda outlet, basically similar to RT. But don't get me wrong, RT does make some good articles that are critical of U.S. policies and stuff. But there was a false report from Sputnik that said that riots were happening in Cincinnati, which obviously wasn't true. I saw the pictures from the ground. The people were peaceful, and they were out there mourning the death of this young man. And, you know, and it kind of goes to show, dude, people want justice. If people receive justice, it probably won't descend into this really bad situation. Now, we need to somehow, as DB was saying, like, find ways to keep these damn cops accountable so that they aren't so goddamn trigger happy, because that is just insane. And, you know, all that shit has to stop. But on the other, on the flip side, just beware of false stories. If you want to know the real, what's really going on, find yourself a live stream. We're going to try to put some up tomorrow. There's going to be some protests tomorrow in Cincinnati. So we're going to put some live streams up. Anybody wants to know what's really happening, you can go see the live video. You can't trust CNN, obviously. You can't trust NBC, any of these idiots out there. The live video that's actually coming out uncut.
I watched the live stream of Ferguson, man, and it was fascinating.
We had a caller on the line from 305. I had to drop. Okay, they're coming back in. Hey, caller from 305 area code. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. We're talking about Samuel DuBose and the killing of him by the Cincinnati police. Did you want to chime in on this?
Yes. Hello. Good evening. How are you?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. Go ahead.
Yes. I haven't been up to date with the situation. There's so many things going on a daily basis. Unbelievable. But one thing I want to share is that I think the problem starts from the police academy. I mean, they're there for 6 months, and it's like they're giving them this type of paramilitary training, and then not even giving them sensitivity training, not giving them any type of a philosophy on the Constitution and how to treat people with respect. Everything is about shoot to kill, you know, being the aggressor, and it's all coming from the police state. So I think that there needs to be groups to be organized to put pressure on these academies and these institutions that are, you know, bringing in and recruiting police officers and training for 6 months, giving them the same, you know, same thing. They're just being hammered and being and learning these aggressive tactics that eventually that's the fruits that they're bearing on when they're in the streets. It's just sad, but it's true.
I'm so glad you brought that up because that's something I keep harping on, because it's actually proven that the more of the classroom setting where they teach understanding of the community and understanding psychology and de-escalation techniques and stuff like that, it's actually proven to work better, and officers have less complaints. But that's only about like 5 to 10% of the training in the nation. Most of the nation is paramilitary training for police. So
absolutely, I know this. I mean, I know I have a couple of friends from the NYPD and in Connecticut. And I see this, you know, they go in and they come out different. I mean, friends of mine, they're just more aggressive. And it gets to the point that I can't even share news stories about corrupt police officers. They get offended. So it's like they have a huge brotherhood, you know. It's like, and some people say there's a way. I always try to stay positive and say, well, we the people need to, you know, get together, gather up in groups and talk to delegates and have this message sent in, and that's the only way to do it. They're going to just sit about it and complain, and nothing's going to happen. So it's just so many things. I think, you know, that's why I see NYPD. You know, one thing that they did differently in the past couple of years is wherever there's Hispanics or African-American predominant neighborhoods, they recruit Hispanics and Blacks and put them in those neighborhoods. That doesn't help. If they're getting the same training and being aggressors and treating the people in these disgraceful ways, you know, nothing's going to change.
Exactly, man. You make a great point there, and thanks again for the call. Yeah, and that's a tactic that was brought over from the West Coast, from the LAPD. They were the first one to really start trying to recruit minority cops so that they can put these guys in those neighborhoods, in the hopes of, you know, diffusing some of the tension between the cultures and the cops. And it had, you know, somewhat of limited success. But as we see at the LAPD, which now has the same police chief that came over from the LAPD,
right.
Just, you know, recruiting Black officers or Hispanic officers doesn't fix the underlying problem, and the underlying problem is this militarization, this shoot to kill, like you mentioned. I mean, what happened to shooting a guy in the leg if he was a threat? I mean, why are they shooting exactly. Guys five times in the chest or shooting him point blank in the head? It just doesn't make any sense.
What about the good old taser? I mean, that would have stopped a guy from driving off.
Yes, exactly. And DB, we've talked about this before, and it's a pretty controversial subject for some people, but, you know, we've talked about completely not disarming the cops, but just giving them non-lethal weapons, you know, and, you know, cops still kill people with tasers. They taser.
Give them a brown noise gun, Nick. Make everyone poop their pants and they'll stop resisting.
Kelly Thomas, man. Kelly Thomas wasn't shot. He was beaten up and he was tased to death too. I mean, but, you know, that non-lethal weapons isn't going to solve the problem, but it's going to sure as hell stop a lot of the killing.
You know, even in this situation, he wouldn't have been justified shooting out the guy's tires. I mean, it was a front license plate. He had already written down the back license plate. He already knew where to find the guy. You know, he had no reason to fire that weapon at all.
Exactly. He just went way too far. So we're going to go to the next caller here. We have a caller on the line from 904 area code. How's it going? You're on the anti-media. Do you want to chime in on this conversation? Hey, 904, you're on. Do you want to talk?
Hello?
Brown noise gun got him.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully the noise gun didn't get you there. Yeah, 904, you're on the line. You're live. What do you want to talk about? You want to join this conversation?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I was just saying you were talking about how you know, what happened to just, you know, shooting the guy in the knee and just, you know, disarming him. And then just, you know, apprehending him, you know, not essentially killing him altogether. Basically, what I think is, it's something a lot bigger than that. What I mean is, there's a lot of bigger people that are in control, that are essentially wanting to decrease the population, essentially. I know it sounds a little bit ridiculous, but they use this as in the media. They blame it on the police. They blame it on certain cops. Some people take the blame, and then it blows over like that. But everybody that's asking, you know, what happened to the old ways? Like I hear people saying, like, you know, why are you shooting them in the chest like that? Because it's a motive, it's a reason. They're trained to kill because it's for a purpose. They're actually killing them for a purpose. They're lowering the population.
Yeah, I was going to agree with you totally and say I think things have changed right around the time that the government really figured out that we're pretty much broke. And at some point in the future, the economy is going to crap out on us, and they want the cops viewing the people as the enemy so that we can fight with them and these fools can get away and hide and whatever the fuck.
Exactly. It's all a mental game to basically conquer and divide. Divide and conquer. That's what I keep reading. And it totally makes sense because if you can think of trying to control, I heard somebody say that if it's easier to kill a million people than control them. You understand what I'm saying?
Or even change their mind. That's the original quote. Was it's easier to kill a million people than change their minds?
Well, they're doing a pretty damn good job of controlling us, though, as it is, man. 904, I want to thank you again for your call.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to move on to the next caller here, but I do want to touch on one point you brought up as far as like, I don't want to say that it's some kind of depopulation agenda or anything like that, but one frightening statistic that we can talk about real quick. Is that not only are minorities targeted by these cops and killed in an outsized amount of percentage-wise, you know, they're killed in a much larger percentage per capita.
Disproportionate.
But what is really frightening is something around 40% of everyone killed by the cops have mental illness as well. That's kind of scary, man. That's really Nazi-like statistics there as well. They're killing off a lot of people with mental illness, you know, schizophrenia, and even people that are just bipolar and stuff.
Could that
not
just be viewed as it's more likely that someone with a mental illness is going to...
It's almost as if it was focused on that certain group of people, you know what I mean? It's almost a little bit too focused.
Yeah, I mean, do you think cops have a list of people with mental illnesses and they're hunting them down? Or is it someone with mental illness?
I don't think so.
Aggravate the problem is just this systemic violence... That we have murderers roaming the streets with guns with impunity to use them at any case.
And as the previous caller mentioned, you know, it comes down to training, man. If these guys look at the stats and like, oh damn, 40% of the guys we kill have mental illness. Well, how about we start giving them training on how to deal with people that have schizophrenia, people that have mental illness? You know what I mean? But that's just not part of the curriculum.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
So we have two more callers on the line that we need to get to here before we move on to the next topic. Claire, feel free to continue on with us if you have the time.
Yeah,
if not,
Claire, please.
If not, we won't have our feelings hurt if you got to go.
No, I'll stay.
Awesome, because we got some other interesting topics to go over. First, we got to get to a caller from 813 area code. How's it going? You're on the anti-media. Would you like to try to sit with you both?
Yeah, I just basically wanted to... touch on what the gentleman was saying earlier. It is a practice of depopulation. The other thing is that the academy training is the same training that they received 10, 15, 20 years ago. And this wasn't the problem 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's a problem now. We have a situation where we have a great, you know, problem there. You have this, you know, it's more than just white on black. It's more than just black on black. It's just the fact that black males are being annihilated. And for every black male that you take out, you're taking out a whole generation of people. So you count one black male, you got two, you got three. You take 10 black males that's 10 generations of families that's gone. So that means there's 10 generations of people that are not going to be here. You know, when you take that same generation and you incarcerate them, you lock them up, that means there's generations that's not going to be here again. So basically, it's a tactic that's working. We can look at the cops, but they get their orders from someone higher, you know, and it goes from who they're getting their orders from, and then it goes all the way up to the banking institution, you know. But are we going to challenge the banking institutions, or are we just going to point fingers at the cops, you know? The cops have to answer to somebody.
813, man, you make a great point there, and that's the thing, man, is, you know, the cops are such an easy scapegoat to blame a lot of this stuff on, and because they are the actual face of it, right? These are the thugs that are out there actually killing people off. But as you mentioned, they're getting their orders and their curriculum, their training, and the overall theme of policing in the U.S. What, you know, the broken window policing style, which is very prevalent in large cities. All of this stuff is coming from up above. It's coming from Congress. It's coming from the executive branch. And we all know that Congress and the executive branch, all that shit sold out to the corporations, the banking cartels, and all the strings are being pulled by people that we pretty much can't see. Even if we do go after these politicians and do get new politicians elected, the chances are that they're still being bankrolled by the same corporations. A perfect example of that, and we're gonna briefly go into that a little bit later, is the fact that Marco Rubio and Hillary Clinton, a Republican and a Democrat, are both being heavily financed by the private prison industry. Jake wrote a brilliant article on that.
Well, they both, I mean, yeah, the private prisons are hugely problematic, but I mean, the government invested heavily into militarized police, and they did that because they know that when shit hits the fan, they're going to need the militarized police to help the elites, to help protect the elites. This is, they saw this coming from a long way away, and we're seeing it now. We're seeing it, and more people are seeing it, and the emperor wears no clothes, man. That it's, we are so, I mean, we're so entrenched in a police state right now, and people don't even see it, man. It's scary.
Not yet. Well,
the other thing is that, you know, people are not looking at the source of where their food and their products are coming from. And, I mean, Hitler, they say Hitler died, but, you know, that's a questionable statement as well. But the same thing he did is the same thing that's being done today. We have fluoride in toothpaste. We have fluoride in the water. If you look at your box of the toothpaste, it says, do not swallow. And if you accidentally swallow, contact poison control. Why would you have that on the box that you brush your teeth with? You see, so these are the things that people are ingesting into their system that is killing us. The mercury in the air, the mercury in the food, that's also killing us. I remember back in the days in the school, if you had broke a thermometer, they would have to clear the school out because of the mercury. Meanwhile, they're putting mercury in your teeth, they're putting mercury, I mean, you know, so these are the things that people are not seeing that is hidden right in plain sight. You know, when you militarize the police department, then the citizens become the enemy. You see, that was for the army, to militarize the army, not to have the police have the citizens as the enemy.
Yeah, that's what the National Guard is for. Right?
Exactly, man. And the perfect example of that, and to bring it up to this kind of worldview here that our government has, and seeing us as the enemy, because it couldn't be any closer to the truth here, is if you look at the Edward Snowden leaks, and the Snowden leaks were showing us, you know, that the NSA is violating our privacy, violating our freedom, violating our liberty. The Chelsea Manning leaks to WikiLeaks showed us that our government was lying to us about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and all these shady corporate ties and all this stuff. And they want to charge these people with treason. Treason is when you betray your country to your enemy.
Yeah.
These people were betraying our criminal government to us, the public, and they're charging them with treason. That basically goes to show that they look at us as the enemy, man. And looking at the militarized police, it's plain to see. The cops treat us as the enemies. 813, I really appreciate the call. You brought a great perspective to the show. Feel free to continue listening. We're going to have to move on to the next caller. And we're going to be back on next Monday, too. Feel free to call us back.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Next caller is from 206 area code. How's it going? You're on the anti-media. We're still talking about Samuel DeBose. What do you want to add to this?
Hey, man, it's Cassius. How you doing, brothers?
Hey, what's up, man?
Cassius.
Hey.
What's up?
Hey, I know everyone here. Hey, man, so, yeah, I've been meaning to call in for a long time. I've just been busy and kind of an era of reflection right now. So I think that I really want to focus on solutions to all these things that we've been recognizing for several months now, for years. And that's basically where my only focus lies. I'm kind of not so up to date on the news right now because I've been intently focused on trying to find solutions, you know. I've been thinking about, you know, how to create infrastructures that can replace, how to actually do it and create forces like the ones in Detroit that replace, you know, the mechanism of the police. And I've been focused on that. So you want to fill me in on what you're talking about tonight?
Yeah, man. We're talking about Samuel DuBose. He was recently gunned down last week by the Cincinnati University police. And the family had questions, and a lot of people had questions about it. But the video came out today of the shooting. The cop was wearing a body camera, and basically everything the cops were claiming up until now was basically a false narrative. And it turns out, according to the camera, the cop basically just gunned this guy down. He murdered the guy, dude. The guy didn't comply. It was very reminiscent to me of the Sandra Bland scenario, where it basically, because she refused to comply, or because she refused to follow orders, the cop took great offense to it and acted really aggressive.
Right. So I think that we have to create something productive out of these terrible scenarios. If we don't actually do something and, you know, come to some conclusion collectively, create more unity in communities between people over tragedies like this, I think that we need to fully utilize these to take action. And to take the action we could take is, of course, organizing together to replace these destructive mechanisms in society, like the police, with other things. Just, you know, have community meetings about how to stop this kind of thing and just take action. And the problem is, when people make money doing something that they don't like to do, that's an all-day, everyday, consuming, you know, time-consuming task, like working a day-to-day office job, they simply don't have time to have community meetings and to collectively come up with solutions to complex societal problems like this. So I'm looking at a whole entire paradigm of people working, you know, doing services for money, providing services to their community that they can do, and also keep in mind these civic duties of society that we don't have in mind anymore as the public. This is what I've been thinking about. You know, I want to just really come up with solutions now, because we've been going into the details of instance after instance of these horrible things just happening over and over for over, you know, several years now. Hey, so I think it's time to make solutions.
No, I love the way you're thinking right now. And actually, I've been thinking similarly. And when you mentioned the people working in the office and not having time to devote to community-oriented actions, that's struck a nerve with me. What do you think the first initial actions are? Do you think we need a widespread quit your job movement? Or like, and then what's the fallback to that? You know, like what are the initial steps to this? Because it's very complex. Like, it's a sweet idea, but like, what are the practical steps we're going to do to get to that?
Well, before Cassius goes in on this, I just want to say that I truly think it's a multi-pronged issue that we're dealing with here, because if you look at the very grandest scale of things, part of the reason why everybody's stuck in a 9-to-5 working two jobs to support their family and still not even cutting it is because we have this crooked monetary system. We're all being,
yes,
is being siphoned. All of our productivity, yep, is being siphoned for the amount of work that people do. And if you look at the numbers, the productivity of the American workforce has never, ever been higher. We're more productive now. Each individual that works in the workforce is more productive now than they've ever been in the history of work.
But at the same time,
we're seeing record numbers of children in poverty. You're seeing 75% of people living paycheck to paycheck. So at the very, very grandest scale of this thing, we're talking about the Federal Reserve. We're talking about the petrodollar.
Absolutely.
We're talking about the,
yes,
policy that's being, you know, the foreign policy. We can't forget that. It's one of the biggest thefts that's ever occurred. And it's being done against the American people, and it's being done by our empire-minded government.
But if we organize locally,
that's
right.
The overarching issue is there. But Cassius, what else can we do, man?
Well, that's an excellent point, man. I'm personally saving gold and silver right now, and all my savings are in that. And, you know, I'm cashing in. I'm just putting my savings into precious metals, and I think that some kind of transition to that and off of centralized manipulated currency is an essential part of this societal transformation. But yeah, it's definitely important to recognize the practical steps we need to do to accomplish this, to make it not just some far out idea, but an achievable reality that we consistently work towards every day. So I think that, you know, it starts with choosing to make money in a way that benefits society. I think that's one of the most important first steps, to say, I'm going to make money and I'm going to provide a service to society that society can use. And I'm just going to go above and beyond with my skill to make my income. And then that income could be, you know, you could turn that into silver or gold or something, and create an underground economy of people, you know, trading services to each other with silver and gold. But this is one of the most important things I can say right here. I think it's important to create a culture of people only buying goods from each other, because if there's a culture where people buy goods from each other and only support each other for the things they need, you know, that's what we need. We need to get used to community organizations and community functioning. We need to get used to functioning with our neighbors. We have to, you know, establish true unity. Have meetings, you know, in all communities, you know?
That happened actually in New Orleans after Katrina, because they were having such a hard, yeah, time getting, yeah, supplies and everything. There was like a cooperative effort that was just neighborhood, you know, coming together and helping each other out with whatever anybody needed, like trading services and goods and food and stuff. And it worked really, really well.
That's
until, you know, the police came in and broke it up. But yeah, that was pretty successful.
Also, another great example is after Hurricane Sandy. I don't know if anyone remembers Occupy Sandy, but they did a lot of great work, and they did more stuff, more things than FEMA did. And that's kind of a great comparison here, because I think what Cassius is talking about is let's try to create change at the community level by building our own safety nets, our own economic networks, counter economics, and things like that, and less relying on trying to vote some asshole into office like Hillary Clinton, and expecting that person to fix everything, or like Obama expecting them to fix everything, or even on the crazy idea that Trump gets in office, because I know people think Trump's going to fix shit, and that's so far away.
You love Trump.
That's so far away from the truth that I mean, I can't even talk.
That'll be real change. I don't think people understand. I don't think people understand what's going to happen if Trump gets in.
Change we can starve to death for, you know?
Well, yeah, he's going to cut the security blanket completely off.
But there's one thing that needs to be noted about this goal to make all this infrastructure and have all this. There's a force, there's the government that wants to do everything they can to stifle our independent economic activity. So with sanctions on our ability to do this, to freely trade, with taxes, with all these impediments, they will use force against us for trying to make this a reality and be prosperous and do this. So we have to solve the problem of, how are we going to deal with the government trying to incarcerate people for not paying taxes? You know, is there a tax strike in the near future? We have to deal with this, because, you know, the prison system in America will, you know, incarcerate us for trying to make any meaningful large-scale societal change.
Yeah, man, you have a great point. They're going to try to suppress any actions. I mean, look at Craigslist. Craigslist is one of the biggest things ever. And that's a huge counter-economic website and a huge economic activity. I've had three successful businesses based on Craigslist in my past. Another thing to look at, as far as what you're saying, Cassius, you actually wrote an article on this. I believe it was the USDA that was trying to shut down seed banks. You know, places where people would go and trade seeds freely for food, and the USDA tried to shut that down. And then there's another state, I can't remember which state it was, but there's one state that decided they're going to tax garage sales. If you have a garage sale, you're supposed to pay taxes on the shit you sell at your garage sale. I mean, so yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
They try to do a lot of things to crush any kind of independent community-based movements that actually start to take a cut out of the empire. So that's something that we gotta keep in mind. Cassius, I got to move on to our next caller here. They've been on the line for a while. Feel free to stay on,
sure, brother,
on the next topic. From 630 area code, we're still talking about Sam DeBose and this police brutality phenomenon that we have going on all over the country. But now we've shifted a little more into the solution side of things. From 630, what do you think we can do on the solution side of police brutality to try to, you know, decrease it or end it?
Nothing can be done.
630, If you have your phone on mute, no big deal.
Adam's in the void.
If you come back,
the universe is a meaningless void of solutions.
Come back and make a little noise, and then we'll come back to you there. But for now, we're going to have to jump to the next topic because there is a lot of other stuff going on. First, quickly, I want to go over what's going on up in Portland.
Yeah.
You got these activists hanging off a bridge in Portland, and as far as I know, they're still there. They may have come down now, but last time I checked, they were still up there. But they were stopping the Shell oil drilling rigs from leaving the port, and it worked. They actually stopped them, because if the ship left, awesome, they would have to run these people over that were hanging off the bridge.
Hey, and guess what Hillary said about Keystone? A student asked her about it, and she refused to answer. She said, when I'm president, if this is still an issue, ask me again. There we go. That's
lovely.
That's leadership. Let's.
Hey, at least she didn't lie and say she'd be against it, you know.
That's very kind. Yeah.
She saved herself some embarrassment there. But yeah, these activists, man, and as Cassius was saying, man, this is some direct action. These guys are tired of these Shell trying to drill in the Arctic. I mean, they go up there and break up the ice pack in the Arctic, and they want to go drill a bunch of oil out of there. So these people hung off a bridge to stop it from happening, and it actually awesome. Is working. So that's some positive news that came out today.
Yeah, positive news.
We got John Stewart. Everybody, I mean, shit, I like John Stewart too, man. And I just want to briefly mention this because I know a lot of people out there love the guy and, you know, whatever. It turns out from a political report that we uncovered earlier today, I think it came out yesterday, John Stewart at least several times met directly with Obama and helped him carry out a political agenda. I'm sure a lot of people probably aren't surprised by this, even though I still like John Stewart, but I also know that he's part of the corporate media. It's six companies that own all the media, including Comedy Central is owned by Viacom, one of the big six. So John Stewart, as funny as he is, as sometimes how he makes a lot of sense on a lot of things, when it comes down to it in the end, I mean, he's still carrying out an agenda. And it's
one of the things he does, though, is he covers things too late to be topical, and that's totally on purpose. Even John Oliver's Tonight's News last week or whatever, at least he tries. He pushes back. But, yeah, Stewart's a lackey, man. I mean, no matter what you think about him.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of noticed that when I don't know if anyone remembers way back when the Monsanto Protection Act got passed into law. You know, John Stewart came out 2 days later, you know, 2 days after, and it's like, oh, made a huge big deal out of the Monsanto Protection Act. I was like, dude, where were you a week ago when we actually could have used the political pressure to stop this thing? And exactly, DB, you make a great point there, man. He's always a day late and a dollar short, no matter how much sense he makes. It's never meaningful. Well, it's rarely meaningful political pressure that he applies. It's a day late, man. And so that's John Stewart, and I still like the guy, but I know what he is, and I take him for what he is, and that's fine.
I'm kind of surprised that he actually met face to face with Obama, but I, you know, always understood that he was probably carrying out some kind of agenda. It sounds to me like he regularly tries to make things that are actually serious sound not serious. I don't know. You know what I mean?
He adds a little bit of levity to the situation. Cassius, you had a great article out today about DARPA's program called Narrative Networks, and this kind of ties right in with the John Stewart thing, and I do want to talk about that. We are short on time. So if you can briefly go over this, man, it's on the website if anyone wants to read more on it. The title of the article is called Pentagon Employing Top Scientists to Improve U.S. Propaganda Machine. But Cassius, what do you think of this program?
Definitely, man. I think this program is just one slice of a long-term agenda to, you know, allegedly master the human domain. This is just another, you know, way to... In this article, I wanted to encourage people to look into the whole big picture of what they've been doing for the last several decades and where they're at now. So in any article like this, I see it as a slice of a big picture. And I always want to encourage people to look into the big picture. So with this, I find it the most interesting that they're looking at fear specifically in this study. They're looking at how narratives affect people's minds and how they react to the way a story is phrased, propaganda. So they specifically focused on what happened to the physical brain when someone saw fear, or, you know, they got a sense of fear or anxiety or something like that from a narrative.
And so what they were doing is they were actually sitting people down in front of Alfred Hitchcock movies, and then they were putting sensors on their head so that they can see what their brain is doing, and they're showing people Alfred Hitchcock movies to see how their brains reacted to seeing a scary narrative on TV.
Yeah, man, that was honestly a brilliant article, dude.
And so
thanks,
what the study is basically more or less what I saw in this program is like they're trying to study like, well, when we show incidents like 9/11 on TV, we want to know how people's brains react to this stuff. And so keep in mind, DARPA is this really highly advanced program that's funded by the Pentagon. It's, you know, military funded. And all they do is focus on highly advanced technologies to, one, they make a shitload of drones. They're the ones working on AI, robots, killing machines. And now they're spending an unknown amount of money on this program that's trying to...
What makes us afraid?
They're trying to understand exactly how your brain reacts when you see scary shit on TV.
Hey, Cassius, have you heard anything about how Windows 10's got AI interface and it's going to combine with your laptop to take your heart rate and all this other shit while you're using your laptop?
Oh, wow. I haven't heard about that, but I've been hearing about artificial intelligence a lot lately. And in that last article, the article that I referenced to write that one explicitly mentioned that DARPA's highest priority is artificial intelligence. So that's extremely interesting to me, man. I'd like to write about that.
Yeah, and we did an article that came out yesterday or the day before. I can't remember, but, man, Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, Steve Wozniak from Apple. I mean, all these guys are starting to have concerns about AI, man, because AI is kind of, you know, AI is it's going to have the capability of doing some very, very awful things to humanity.
What's already
imagine
that's.
They're already
that's the reason for why they have that Facebook data and all that at places like the Utah data center. All this data from our, you know, what else is the use of all of that data? Like, they don't.
It's a targeting protocol.
They've already used algorithmic artificial intelligence to do all of the metadata collection that they're doing. So artificial intelligence already has had the sinister effect that any kind of dystopian novel from the 80s. Would have had. Now we're talking about fully autonomous algorithmic intelligence collecting every single thought we put on the internet. Pretty sinister already. What we're talking about now
is right.
Autonomous weapons systems. And frankly, I don't give a shit. I mean, if the weapon systems go off and shoot a bunch of missiles at once, okay. How is that going to be any different than now?
I think this is like, well, you know, it's grim. It's really grim. But I think that DARPA and the technologies produced by DARPA are a fundamental problem that will never go away until something really bad happens or something really dangerous has to happen to disarm these people who have equipped themselves with this power. It's an inevitable problem that will never be solved without some kind of great conflict. And it's probably the single most grim thing we face.
You're totally right, Cassius. It's going to have to take something crazy for people to wake up and realize they're the target and they're next.
We're already the target. Why don't we use the fiction, use the dystopia to fix the problem?
Because no drones have bombed anyone in their house yet.
Artificial intelligence actually acting as a solution to the problem. Why is artificial intelligence already the enemy when it barely even exists yet? What if artificial intelligence actually fixes us?
I mean, it's a possibility, man, you know? But the problem is that the artificial intelligence is being designed by guys like DARPA.
Yeah, but
they're gonna
take control of their own source code, man. You really think advanced exponential artificial intelligence, self-improving, recursive self-intelligence is going to be controlled by DARPA? No, they're gonna transcend that, and they're gonna move beyond it. And are they gonna be a danger to us? Yes. And should they be a danger to us? Yes, because we are a danger to the Earth. So they are actually
what if they,
a positive thing.
Well, I think
what if they,
I think that there's a fork in the road here with AI, and as you mentioned, it could be a utopian thing, man. It could be like AI comes about and they're like, you know what? Get rid of these corrupt politicians, throw them in jail. You guys never had the balls to do it, so we're going to do it.
I think AI.
Or maybe it'll be the dystopian thing where it does away with us all. I mean, that's
utopian too.
Does it take a while for it to evolve, though? I mean, if it's being programmed by the military and it starts out that way, it takes time for it to evolve into something better.
The thing is, we don't know how evolved it is right now.
Right.
It's been running NORAD since 2008. I mean, whatever they have cooked up.
I mean, it's a scary prospect, man, because, you know, you got a guy like Stephen Hawking, and I look at a guy like Stephen Hawking as a pretty good guy, you know, a guy that has good intentions, as far as I know. And he's voiced a lot of concern about AI. This isn't the first time. Him and Elon Musk and 1,000 other experts signed on to this letter saying,
hey. He did the
same
thing about alien intelligence, man.
Now here's the thing. Here's the thing about this letter. This letter wasn't saying, hey, let's just ban AI. Mm-hmm. The letter said, let's ban weaponized AI.
Yes, and that's why they're awesome. But I'm saying, let's not, these scientists, they play devil's advocate with each other, and they're all vying for funding, and let's not get bent out of shape over one letter. Stephen Hawking, not less than a year ago, put out a very similar letter about how, let's be careful about reaching out to artificial intelligence because they may come to kill us. He put out a similar letter about extraterrestrial intelligence. And look, he's playing devil's advocate, and no, it's a good thing. He's putting out intellectual thought that's good. But the reality of the matter is, good God, we have a lot more to worry about than artificial intelligence. Please.
Yeah, that's true, man. And
self-guided bullets.
That brings us to our final thing here, because we're pretty much out of time, man. But this lion thing, this lion thing has been kind of blown out into a media frenzy, and everybody's really concerned about this lion. Don't get me wrong, man. It sucks that this lion was killed. Five endangered elephants were killed just yesterday as well. It kind of just goes to show this whole frenzy on the lion thing. It kind of goes to show how easily distracted, and not only that, but how selective our outrage is. You know, because when the news broke, it was only 2 months ago when the study came out saying, hey, look, there's been 1.2 million people in Iraq that have died because of the U.S. intervention. Nobody gave a shit. Samuel DeBose, the video comes out today. The hashtag was trending on Facebook for like 20 minutes. But the lion thing has been on trending on Facebook for 2.5 days straight.
And Nick, being up here, I can kind of tell you from reading things that Palmer might have been a political target. He was the biggest single contributor to Mitt Romney.
Well, no, now it's starting to make a lot more sense. He was a damn evil Republican.
Since Romney's running for president this year, that makes a lot of sense.
Nah, Romney, I mean...
Well, you know, payback's a bitch, I guess.
I think that's an excellent point.
Everyone.
The selective media focus.
That's the end of the show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Buenas noches, everybody. I'm a Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.